Hello and welcome back to Kessel Run Relay, a Star Wars podcast. As a reminder, our episodes drop bi-weekly at the beginning of the week. Be sure to follow us on social media. Our links will be in the description. This week, we're happy to be back and discussing the newest Star Wars adult book, Mace Windu, The Glass Abyss. But before we get started, hi, my name is Hayden. I use she, her pronouns. You can find me on social media, on Twitter at, what is it, MCUYTD, TikTok and Instagram at Taika.YTD. And my brainworm of the week recently has been What Moves the Dead by T. Kingfisher. As it is October, it is spooky season. I've been really getting back into horror. I've been just marking through these books. I read like four within a week, and specifically What Moves the Dead is it's been stuck in my brain ever since I've read it. So Emily, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Emily, pronouns she, her. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at _StardustM and on TikTok at StardustM. My brainworm of the week is the constant shock that Cyril Karn is American. I was, they have that live channel on Disney Plus now, and I was like, oh, they're showing Andor. And it started out with one of the Cyril scenes, and I was like, oh, I forgot he doesn't have a British accent. And I was like, I forget Kyle is also not British, even though I know that, but I just like still was so thrown off. I was like, I forget that he's not, doesn't have that accent.
He has a very British face. The concept of an iPhone face, but with a British accent, is I think applied to him.
Yes, he's from the East Coast, so. Our very special guest, would you like to introduce yourself?
No, I'd like to hear you introduce me.
So we have an extremely special guest on the podcast today, author, martial artist, and TV writer, Stephen Barnes, who wrote the newest Star Wars book coming out, Mace Windu, The Glass Abyss.
Woo!
We're so excited to have you on.
It's great. Well, I'll try to live up to your excitement.
Oh.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, you go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just, before we get started, just to give, I guess, like, in case you guys don't know, Mace Windu, The Glass Abyss is the new Star Wars book. It follows Mace Windu set after the Phantom Menace and Qui-Gon's death, as he is given a task to complete by Qui-Gon that sends him to a brand new planet on a brand new adventure to help kind of take down a criminal enterprise. And it is very, very good, if I do say so myself. So we'll just, I think, jump right into the questions. Hayden, do you want to start?
Please do.
Absolutely, of course. So Stephen, you've written for some of the most famous science fiction television shows, including but not limited to The Twilight Zone, in addition to actually writing another Star Wars book called The Cestus Deception. It also follows some Jedi of the Jedi Order, but of course today we're focusing on Mace Windu. So given your history and your background as a science fiction writer, how has that background informed how you write both Star Wars stories that you've written, both Cestus Deception as well as Mace Windu, The Glass Abyss?
Well, it's a good question. Star Wars is not science fiction, it's science fantasy. You know, it's wizards and dragons with science fiction image systems. The difference between science fiction and fantasy, the way I look at it, is that science fiction has to be both internally and externally consistent. It has to be consistent with the laws of physics, biology, whatever, except that you are allowed to break maybe one law. You know, and then you say, what if that was different? Fantasy has to be internally consistent. It's not commenting on the structure of the universe. It's commenting really about what are human beings and what is the connection between human beings. Fantasy is not easier. In some ways, it's harder because I think it's easy to, if you are anchored to physics, you have a structure. Whereas if in fantasy, you could conceivably just go hog wild, in which case you create something that doesn't work because there has to be an internal structure or else people will get the feeling this isn't real. You know, this, you know, you can just wave your hands and make anything happen. That's not the universe as I understand it. So my training and predilection as a science fiction writer is to ask, how does this world work? You know, what's going on here? So I'm not capable, I'm literally not capable of writing about a society without asking, what is their sewage system? You know, how do they get their food? What's their unit of exchange? I can't talk about an alien without asking, how do they reproduce? You know, what's their life cycle? Those things are so automatic with me that if I'm hired to do that for Star Wars, I have to hold myself back because I know that there are aspects of that that are not going to be of primary interest to the target audience. So, you know, my task, imagine a Venn diagram, three different circles. My task was to write a, first of all, most important, write a good Star Wars novel, cracking good Star Wars novel for the fans, where they'd feel like, wow, I feel like I just saw a great Star Wars movie. Then there's another circle. I wanted it to be a good science fiction story because that's the way I focus on it. And it is possible to do that within the realm of Star Wars, even though you get a little rubbery at times with things because, you know, you're in a universe in which star cruisers make sound in space. So the physics are fuzzy, you know. But still, I wanted to do that because that's kind of that's how I roll. And then I wanted it to be a good Stephen Barnes novel. There are certain things that I do in my work. There are certain perspectives that I have. I have limitations. There are things I cannot write, but there are other things that I do very well. And actually, one of the things I was excited about doing this is that one of the things I love doing is crazy fight scenes, what I call 2.5 dimensional. There's, you know, human beings don't really move like, not really quite that fast and tough and so forth. So the physics and the physiology aren't quite like they are in our universe, but they're sufficiently convincing that you can relax and have fun with it. So, and then there are other things that have to do with the philosophy and so forth that a writer, any individual artist has a perspective on what the world is, and that perspective hopefully informs what it is that they do. So it has to be my voice. I wanted people to if you took my name off the cover, I would want people who read it, who have read my work, to say, "Man, this sounds like Steve Barnes." I wanted them to have that sense. You know, it's like, you know, what is it that I do in these contexts? You know, and ultimately, it's not saying that what I do is better than anything else in particular. It's just what I do. And so, what else can I bring to a project except who it is that I am? So, I hope that answers your question.
Oh no, it does absolutely. And just for our listeners, past this point, we may get into some light spoiler territory. But you touched on this a little bit in your previous answer. But what, you know, you talked about how you make your novels specifically you, and how you want your readers to be able to distinguish your own writing style, again, if your name was taken off of the cover. So what kind of ideas, world building concepts, character beats that were specifically interesting to you that you wanted to explore when you were writing The Glass Abyss?
Well, I'm very interested in what warriors are. I consider the warrior archetype to be one of the central archetypes of humanity. There is the healer, the teacher, the lover, so forth, the warrior. And they're all aspects of what we are. But this is an aspect of what we are that I have been fascinated by my whole life, at least partially in trying to understand what it is to be a man. And traditionally, most warriors have been men because of the fact that if you have women as your warriors, you're killing the very people who are creating the warriors in the first place. Your population will collapse fairly quickly. It has nothing to do with whether women can fight. They can fight, they're lethal, but it's not effective and efficient to do that unless your culture is going to die if you lose the next battle. Otherwise, you send your men are your cannon fodder, in essence. What is it that that cannon fodder has to think and do? Most of those are farmers, you know, and then you say the battle is coming, and the farmers have to march off to war and turn their plows into swords. But they will be trained by and led by the professional warriors. Sometimes those are soldiers, and there's a level above that, which is someone who has kind of a, this is their spiritual path. This is who they are. This is what they do. They operate to protect the things that are precious to them. Jedi are a particular form of holy spiritual warrior. And it's a mythos, it's a mythological image, which is extraordinarily popular in our culture. So I enjoy interrogating that, and I enjoy asking questions about, well, what would the Jedi really be? Knowing that thousands of people have had input into creating the look and feel and ethics and so forth of this world. It's if they were taking apart ancient Greece, there would be problems because there'd be different interpretations of history texts and so forth. But when you're talking about an imaginary world, there's, ultimately there's no there there. There's nothing solid. It's like if you have 1,000 different people writing about Batman, trust me, Batman's psychology does not really make any sense. You can't follow what is being said in those comic books and become Batman. It just doesn't work. So, this is something that I actually have a lot of interest in, and through my interest in and study of martial arts, I've not only come into contact with that aspect of myself, but I've known a lot of people who are further than I am along that path, and who have reported back to me, this is what this is. This is what it is to be this kind of human being, whether they were in the military or they're, police officers, bodyguards, people who have actually dealt with and sometimes dealt out death and placed their own bodies between what they love and harm. What does that take? What is that? That really interests me. So that's one of the things that you're going to find in a lot of my books when I have that opportunity. But that ultimately ties into questions of, there are only two things in art and in philosophy that there are to talk about. One is, who am I? And the other is, what is true? In other words, what are human beings and what is the world that those human beings live in? So while respecting what has been done before in Star Wars, I felt like I had not just the right or the opportunity, but the obligation to put my two cents in. This is what I think, we are. This is what I think a Jedi is, and this is ultimately what I think Mace Windu might be. If we know from Attack of the Clones and Phantom Menace and so forth, these things that Mace Windu did, we can ask ourselves, well, what kind of human being is he? And I am interested in that. What we have seen is a total of about 90 seconds of Mace Windu speaking and fighting, in a very formal setting. But, in all likelihood, he dances around the kitchen naked making pancakes when he's by himself. I mean, what is he, So that question of his humanity, who is he? I felt like this would be an opportunity for me to fill in those gaps. He was pretty much a cipher in some ways. I on some of the fan threads, people talk about how, he has no personality in this and the other. That's just because the people who wrote him didn't give him one. So I gave him one.
I think that leads kind of perfectly into this next question because I was just, thinking about as you were saying, like his humanity. So kind of on that, like if you could go a little deeper into like what were the most interesting aspects of Mace Windu to write? I think too, one thing that really stuck out to me was like how
Let's
human he
see.
felt.
The things that I found absolutely most interesting might be in spoiler territory, but I would say that I think it's not going too far to say that we have a chance to dig into his childhood in to a degree, and ask some questions about his early steps along the Jedi path in that sense. I think that that was probably the most interesting thing that I can discuss directly. You can ask me that question again after you stop recording, and answer the question differently. What would it take to become the arguably the second most powerful Jedi in the world? What kind of human being is that? What did it cost him? What did it benefit him? How does he feel about these things? I had a chance to touch on some of those things, and it's up to the fans to tell me whether or not I did it well. I can tell you that I cared. I can tell you that I did the best I could, but I can't tell you whether I was successful.
I mean, I think you were very successful, but
No, thank you. Thank you. No,
it
that
is
mean that means
fans'
a lot to me,
opinion.
honestly.
Yeah, I think I was really interested when this book came out because I feel like there's so much, like the fans have so strong certain opinions on Mace Windu, and some of them are very negative. But I've always viewed him, he's always been a very interesting character because of like how he operates in the story. So I was really interested to see like a full take on him in his head where you could really sense who he was as
Well,
a character and not just acting in Anakin's story.
if you know what I mean, and I want to be delicate about this, there are aspects of Mace Windu that are intrinsic to the character, and there are aspects of the reaction to Mace Windu which are extrinsic, that don't have to do with who he is within the Star Wars universe, but have to do with other factors.
Yeah, I
Is
think
that being delicate enough? I think you know what I mean.
yes, something very similar I think happens with Saw Gerrera as well on that front. So
Or Rey. I mean, you look at characters and you understand that part of the reaction has to do with who are they within the Star Wars universe, but we're not in the Star Wars universe. The readers are in our universe. So how do social conventions and image systems and things like that impact how people feel about fictional characters? You better believe that impacts. And so as a writer, I have to factor both of those things in, and if I don't do that, I feel like I'm abdicating my responsibilities as an artist.
Absolutely. And as an artist, you're also a martial artist. And some of the parts of the Glass Abyss, we get to really, we've mentioned this before, but really enter Mace Windu's mind and see how he processes things, how he's able to move through the world. So, being a martial artist yourself, how did you approach describing Mace Windu's either meditative practices, even going so far as to write his fight scenes? What was that like to really get in the mind of such an iconic character using your knowledge as a martial artist?
Well, I would start with the assumption that he is complete. That he is a man. He has killed more people than he can count. He knows exactly who he is within that context. He has been trained to the point that his skills are unconscious competence, at which point the expression of the skills becomes art. So, one of the things that you do when you're writing a fight scene, for instance, that might be the easiest piece of this to take apart, is that you look at a fight scene at least three different ways. There's the attacker, there's the defender, and there's the neutral witness. What does it look like from the outside? What does it feel like to somebody who's actually participating in the fight? Those are not the same things. And I actually had some fun playing with that by showing the difference between the way Mace thought about the strategy during a fight as opposed to the way it looked to the people who were watching the fight. As a martial artist, and I've studied, I consider myself to have a really good writer's understanding of the martial arts. I've had the chance to know extraordinary people, and my own rank is not a subject here, but let's just say this is not my first rodeo. I mean, this is something I've been doing basically all my life. It's very serious to me, but I enjoy playing with it. I can talk about martial arts from the perspective of physics or physiology or psychology or sociology or anthropology or, spirituality, any number of different things. So I can take pieces of that. And remember that the Jedi, there are concepts of energetic play in the martial arts, ki and chi and prana and stuff like that. The Jedi, the Force is the equivalent of those things if those things were demonstrable. It's like, okay, you can actually move, something across a table using the force. This is not something, Do you feel that? No, you can see it. Okay. So what would such techniques be? What would be the philosophical strategies, if you were talking about a real force, something that was as tangible as electricity, in essence. So it was an opportunity for me to have good play, good fun. So, there's a fight, but the other thing that's important is that on another level, it's just a kung fu movie, in terms of a fight scene. And the trick in a kung fu movie is, what is it that is being said about your character? That Jackie Chan, for instance, will do a fight scene, and you can feel, you can see not just his skill, but his personality and his intelligence and creativity, his courage, his concern for other people's lives. He almost never killed, So a fight scene then is an expression of his being. It's not just a series of moves. If you look at Sylvester Stallone, every fight scene in a Rocky movie is a three-act morality play. He builds it up very carefully, and then he pays it off. And that's why his movies have been so massively successful. It's not just about throwing punches. So in the book, every scene has to satisfy multiple needs. It has to be exciting, it has to say something about the context, it has to say something about the situation, it has to move the plot forward, etc., etc., etc. So all those things have to be woven together. So the first draft, I'm just having fun. Then in the rewrite, the edit, I'm picking it apart and looking at it from multiple angles and saying, does this work? And how do I do this? And so it's a lot of fun.
Awesome. No, I think the one scene of the novel, this is light spoiler territory. Of course, I won't spoil whatever happens, is one of the main beginning scenes. And I believe it was released on as an excerpt by either StarWars.com or one of their partners, but I'm not going to go again into specifics just in case it wasn't. But there is one very specific scene at the very beginning of the novel where he does exactly that, where you can really see how he's strategizing and he knows he has the audience. You talked about how the fight scenes have those three points of view, the attacker, the actual person defending themselves, and then the onlookers. And again, not super excuse me, spoiler territory, but how you chose to incorporate those who you knew were on the sidelines, that I think really reflects the tact in your answer and how you responded to that question, is examining all parts of the fight scenes and how Mace was able to demonstrate his creativity and his knowledge of what his presence in News Axis would do to the kind of to the forces at play. I'll say that.
Was there a question lurking in there, or was that just a comment?
I mean, if you think there's a question in there, go ahead.
No, I didn't hear a question. I mean, I know the scene that you're talking about, and you have to ask yourself, well, what was Mace's intent? And I don't think it would be saying too much to say that he had a specific intent that went beyond
Absolutely.
killing the people there. There was something that he was up to. And that made it fun. There were a lot of times that one of the things that people have commented on is that they felt like I'd given Mace a sense of humor, and
Yeah,
I hope that is
definitely.
true. There were a lot of times when I was laughing my ass off about doing this scene or Mace saying this or doing that. I had great fun with that, and my editor Elizabeth, let me get away with murder, in some ways, in the sense that she was very supportive. I didn't really get away with anything because the people at Lucasfilm, they ultimately have the say. And I had some agreement with them about one aspect of the book that I won't go into at this moment, but we could talk about later. But aside from that, I knew that I didn't want to put my foot down too much. There were things that I was willing to put my foot down about and say, this is really how I see this. And what would I have done if they had had me do something that I felt was inappropriate or a violation of the verbal commitments that they'd made to me? Once again, probably not a comment for, for the air, but I would have, Stevie would have been unhappy.
I feel like I could definitely, like, reading it, picture like Samuel L. Jackson, like, saying those, like, some of
Yes.
those lines that you
Oh,
gave him, though. Like,
absolutely.
it sounds very, like,
Absolutely.
despite the fact that, like, you said, like, yeah, it makes window, we don't maybe see as much of his humor, but like, it just still felt
I am
so in
tired of these
character.
Bantha herding Siths on this Bantha herding planet. No, I didn't say that, but I did take advantage of our cultural awareness of his speech rhythms. We'll say that.
Yes, and I think it definitely like pays off. Like, I definitely like, and even like
Absolutely.
some of the facial expressions, I could just imagine him like making in some of those scenes, like reacting to the information.
I can always hope that they'll say, hey, this would make a great mini series or something like that. Who knows?
Yes, I mean, he has said he would want to come back, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're running out of time to use him, but I met Sam Jackson once, and
Oh,
I can tell
wow.
you that I thought he was the coolest human being I had ever met in my life. He's impressive. He's an impressive man.
Yeah, he see I feel like it'd
Who's
be
been
so
married to the same
intimidating.
woman for over 35 years.
Really?
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. It's a beautiful thing. Let's move on.
That's wonderful.
Absolutely. So, going back to what you were saying about the concept of a warrior and how you personally see them, as you called Mace Windu complete, there is another character, and I am referring back to the excerpt released on StarWars.com, so we're not really into spoilatory just yet, but we are introduced to a couple of new characters. We are introduced to Maya 12, who does play, I would say, a larger part in the story going forward, and
And was
Vinvin.
named after my niece.
Oh, that's
Oh, that's
adorable.
so absolutely, actually, my grandniece, and
Oh.
that actually shaped her personality too a bit. I wanted that character to be something that my niece would be proud of.
I think you really
That's so
did.
sweet.
You did such a great job with her. Both her and Vinvin were some of my sleeper favorites, I want to
Oh,
say.
and Vincent is the name of my grandnephew. You
Oh my
picked it
gosh.
up. Those two, I loved them. They were my gift to my grandnephew. And there's a character named Nala, which is the name of my grandpuppy. And my daughter is beautiful pit bull, white
Oh
pit
my
bull, just
gosh.
beautiful. Wonderful, sweetheart, sweetest dog in the world, fiercely protective. I just adore Nala. I kind of wear my heart on my sleeve. That's one of the reasons, that's one of the things I got from the martial arts, is that, what I wanted was to be free to be myself. So now I don't worry about shit. This is who I am. It's all I got, and I'm going to be as happy as I can be, and I will cry and laugh and love and whatnot, because I know that there's a part of me that is extraordinarily serious if you push me beyond a certain point. But the freedom to love means you also have the freedom to speak of what you love and what you fear and what you care about. So you, if you If you look at the way I designed the planet Metagos or Metagos, I've heard people saying Metagos. It's actually not bad. I call it Metagos. There's a lot of detail, and all of that is to create a sense of authenticity. An author is an authority. Authority. That an author is God in the universe of the story. So if I can create sufficient detail, but hopefully not too much, but enough so that you feel like, wow, this is a real place. Now your characters become real. They're real
Absolutely.
people in a real place with real hopes and dreams, and now you care about them. That's what I wanted. That was the, when the world seems real, the people seem real, and now the emotions and the stakes are real. And it's a substitute for $50 million worth of industrial light and magic effects. I can't do that. So what do I do to create that wow effect? You make the people as real as you can, and you make the world as real as you can. And now when something happens, the audience creates a special effects in their mind and says, hopefully, wow. It's all part of that. When you, the purpose of a piece of art, on one level, art is self-expression, expression of the deep self of you are. But successful art is self-expression plus communication. That somebody read what you did or saw what you did and had an emotional response that is congruent with the emotions you wish to project, hopefully the emotions you generated within yourself, and then found, use your skill to put them on the page, and then the person on the other side was able to decode what you said, and that's what structure, the structures and tropes of fiction are about, is they're the language of emotion on the page. All of these things, all the characters and the way you present them and their hopes and dreams in the background, every word creates a change. Short story, poetry takes this to the very highest level. Every single word in a poem has to be exactly that word. In a novel, especially a novel where it has to be delivered by April 14th, you can't do that, but you do the best you can. And I knew that when someone put the book down, I wanted them to have an emotional response. What is the emotion I want them to have when they put the book down, or when they walk out of the theater or turn off the television show? Every word, every image, every phrase, every paragraph is working towards building that emotional moment when they close the book and they say, hopefully, wow, what an experience.
No, I can definitely say when I, well, we of course got advanced reader copy, excuse me, copies. Thank you to Penguin Random House, by the way, for providing those. When I finally swipe past the acknowledgments and I turn off my iPad, I was like, whoa. Oh my God. Like I was sitting in bed. I had to like sit there in silence for a couple of minutes because I just had to fully process. Like, I think I read it in about maybe 20 chapter chunks, and then after like page 50,
Short chapters, yeah, deliberately.
yeah, super short chapters.
That was that was another structural choice because the chapters were dense in terms of detail at times. I wanted the chapters to be short so that people would not be overwhelmed. They could consume it in bite-sized chunks, depending on how much they information they could absorb to the emotional level. Lots of different
Absolutely.
choices. That's one of the things that makes art fun, is the choices that you get to make.
No, and I commented to M about this a couple of times, is that the structure of the chapters was so unique, and it was not really something that I had that I had encountered before, at least like that short of a chapter. Like one of them was maybe like three quarters of a page, and then a couple were longer. But it really does, now that you said that, it really does ring true how you can really you kind of need a moment to absorb all of the detail that you wrote. And I think that really all came to a head, especially again when I shut my iPad and I sit there for a couple of minutes and just kind of absorb everything. I think after
Well,
like chapter.
if I did it right, then I'm pulling you into a world with sufficient gravity and hopefully have earned your trust enough to for you to say, okay, I'll wait for the big action, because right now we're getting to know these people in this place. When the big action starts kicking in the second half of the book, hopefully people understand this, glass abyss. The glass is not just transparent and sharp, but it's also fragile. Okay?
Absolutely.
So by creating a world which is very carefully balanced, there's seven levels and there's this and there's that, we understand that this world is at risk. Not like Alderaan being blown up, perhaps, but there's this tiny little pocket of life on an otherwise dead planet. And this is one of the things that you do in a Star Wars novel, not because you often have big armies fighting, but let's say a James Bond novel or James Bond movie. You have to have events that are world engaging, complicated and huge, but structured in such a way that a single human being willing to die to accomplish what they want can make a difference. So that's the thing. How do you create both of those things? It's big, it has implications for the entire galaxy, but ultimately it's about the fragility of a human contact, or in this particular case, and you'll know what I mean, the integrity of a relationship or a friendship between a couple of individuals. How does an individual human heart or relationship connect to the galaxy? And this is, I think, what made the original Star Wars work. And I've said this before, and I'll say this again, that the moment at which Star Wars became something other than a nifty space fantasy was the moment when Luke was in the trench on the Death Star, and his friends are being killed, and they've already failed to drop the torpedo into the vent. And Darth Vader is coming after him, and Grand Moff Tarkin is saying, fire up the laser, and Carrie Fisher with the cinnamon buns on the side of her head is looking very pensive, and John Williams' music is going, and things are moving faster and faster and faster in a way we had never seen at that time effects being used in that way. It was unique. That would had never been done. And in the midst of all this future shock, as you will, you hear Obi-Wan's voice saying, "Trust your feelings." And I think at that point, a billion nerds who wonder, does anybody see my heart? Will anyone love me? Does my mind matter? This world is so big, it's so fast, that an individual human being still has worth. I don't know about you, but I need to know that. I need to believe that. I need to believe that my life has meaning, my heart has meaning. And I think that George Lucas did something important there. And so
Absolutely.
I did not read other Star Wars books to write this. I read a little bit of a couple of them. But even with the Cestus exception, I never read any other Star Wars books. I read Tales from this Starport Bar, whatever it was. It was a collection of Star Wars short stories. That I did. But I watched the movies over and over again. I was watching the movies every day. Just that was part of my input to get the sense of the rhythm and the timing and so forth. And trying to figure out what is the best, how do I make the fans happy and also write a book that I can be proud of and also do a book that expresses who I am. How can I do that? Every day I had those questions in my mind.
Yeah, I one thing I really love about this is like it's set in the prequel, but I do love how, not getting I guess too into spoilers, but the elements of that you could still feel like the rebellion elements of it with what happens. I just love that, and like the themes of like exactly what we're saying, like this of course the eternal things of like hope, and then like just like one person can make such a big difference in the galaxy.
Yeah, and I think that that's heroic adventure teaches us how to deal with fear and faith and hope and love. So these are things that are worth preserving and worth promoting. I know that on one level we're talking about, trivial entertainment. And on another level, you're talking about something that is as important as air. It's both at the same time. Like I said, I take my responsibility to the fans very seriously. I hope you can sense that about me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You
Yeah.
guys matter.
Thank
Thank you.
you. kind of speaking of your like you mentioned writing the Cestus Deception. How did writing this book compare to writing that? I think that, like, especially like you wrote that in the early 2000s, there's obviously a lot less Star Wars then, and maybe a different, like a kind of growing fan base. So, like, how did that compare?
Well, there were a couple different things. They're different. I'm a better writer now. Mace Windu, for multiple reasons, is a more interesting character to me than, I guess, was that Obi-Wan in Incestus Deception?
Yes,
I
I
think
believe
it
so.
was that,
Yes.
Obi-Wan? God, it's like, I've written 35 novels. I
Yeah.
don't remember all the details of things. I'm sorry. Plus, of course, I'm very old, so my brain cells, little gray cells, aren't working quite as well as they used to. Where am I? Mother, bring my teeth. Anyway, so there is that. There's also the fact that, quite frankly, I'm starting to wind down my book writing career. I want there are things that I want to do in Hollywood, but I don't know how many more novels I've got in me. I did this because it was fun and there were enough zeros on the check and there was something that I felt I could contribute and something I could do that would make a difference. As you well know, I kind of changed the game a little bit in this book in some ways that once again, we can't talk about that yet.
I think, but the way I was surprised, and I was like shocked and surprised in a very pleasant way with some of the things that you did with Mace's character, where I was
Well,
like,
certain things,
were certain things, certain things that I was like, I like actually really love this for then thinking about the context of his character throughout the prequels, to like think of him thinking back to like this situation is so like adds a lot to his character, I think.
That's good. I'm glad. That's definitely what I wanted, for a variety of reasons. I am here as a representative of Lucasfilm talking about it, and I take this, I understand that responsibility, but I also have to make myself happy, and I've had to deal with certain realities in life as we all do. And so if you can address some concerns that are more personal to you, it helps tap into the power that you can use to make the language. It's like, why am I writing this book? It can't just be about the zeros. It can't be. Once you spent the money, it's gone. So why am I doing this? Why do I care? Every day when I wake up, I have to have a reason to care. Why am I getting up? Why am I doing this? And I always had a reason. There was never a day that I was thinking, oh God, let me just work on this book again. No. I was scared. I always hit a point in every project where it feels like the entire thing is puree of batshit. This isn't going to work. It never worked. I've lost all my ability. Just those voices are always there, and I get them every single time. The only difference now is that I know what's going to happen. I know that I'm going to go through that, and so I don't take it seriously. It's like, oh, there it is again. I actually call that part of my personality Mortimer. So there's Mortimer again.
Well, just going back to how you mentioned, the Bruce Lee movies and the other Kung Fu movies, which other projects, for example, I know again you mentioned Kung Fu movies, which other projects had the most influence on Glass Abyss? And that could be, again, character beats, kind of like archetypal
Oh, I mean, for
tropes.
God's sake, if you don't notice Sergio Leone's spaghetti westerns, that I'm talking about, John Woo's, movies like Hard Boiled and so forth are basically like Kung Fu movies, but there's an entire aspect of the structure of the plot that comes right out
Absolutely.
of a spaghetti western. And I once again, this was with their approval. I'm not going to say what spaghetti western it is, but with that clue, you should pick it up pretty fast. And that's very deliberate and a lot of fun. And I'm hoping that the fans enjoy that. So far, they seem to have. And it all the majority of storytelling is retelling older stories throughout all human history. So when people complain, why doesn't Hollywood have any new ideas? There are no new ideas. They're just new interpretations and combinations. That's all that there is. And once you get that, then you have the responsibility. Okay, well, if this is a retelling of an old and favorite story, how do I do this in a new way? That I'm willing to put all my creativity into, but I openly acknowledge, and not only that, but one of the lead villains, characters, was stolen, not stolen, but borrowed, haha, right out of a Modesty Blaise novel by Peter O'Donnell. And I acknowledge that in the closing credits. I think that Modesty Blaise, oh, I think the Modesty Blaise novels by Peter O'Donnell had the best female action hero heroine ever. And the fight scenes are superb. I was friends with Peter for over 20 years, and I just think the world of what he created there. So when I do a fight scene, he's my standard. Just the clarity, the degree to which you're expressing the personality, the degree to which each of them is a unique tableau. God, I am so delighted that I've been able to spend as much of my life doing the thing I wanted to do when I was a kid. Just be honest with you. There were only three things I wanted when I was a kid. I wanted to master martial arts, I wanted to master writing, and I wanted a family to love. And I have been blessed. I have all three of those things. Yeah, I've worked harder than hell for a very long time. But a lot of people work hard and never get the thing that they desire. I, for all the stress and strain and problems in my life, so I am who I wanted to be. I am that guy. It's if I could go back and send a message in a bottle to the kid that I was, who looked out at the world and wondered, is there any place for my heart? Is there any chance I'm going to be able to have the dreams that I had? I would just tell him, have faith. It's all going to be okay. There are a couple other things I'd say too. I'd send him a technique for how to learn how to deal with his fear better. So I had dealt was dealing with a lot of fear growing up from being bullied, and there are some other factors. But when you are grateful for life, gratitude is the antidote for stress. Gratitude is the antidote for fear and anger and guilt. It is gratitude for what we have now that gives us faith in the future. So every single day, I literally do a ritual where I'm doing Tai Chi, the Tai Chi Chuan form, and I'm chanting affirmations aloud, largely about my mint thanks for my mentors. And I will one of the things I'll say is, I'm grateful for the people who love me and trust me. My son Jason, love that boy so much. My daughter Nikki, my beautiful, brilliant wife Tananarive. If I say that out loud, to remind myself that no matter what is going on in my life, this is the life I chose. If you feel like your life was forced upon you, that's stress. But when you realize, I asked for this. This is created by my actions every day for all these years. Then the stresses that happen, that's just chop wood, carry water. It's just the way life is. It's nothing special. Reality isn't going out of its way to hurt you. The bad news is the universe doesn't care. The good news is the universe doesn't care. It's not going to stop you from accomplishing your goals. And actually, I've spent my entire life studying the things that can turn you into a Jedi, in essence. How do you create a dream and step into it? And I think that one of the things you do is you're careful about what kind of entertainment you input. I consider Star Wars to be healthy entertainment.
That's really, I feel like I'm gonna tear up. That was really
Yeah.
beautiful. I speak of, like, because you're talking about when you were a kid, were you a big Star Wars like fan growing up? Was that something you were interested in, or was it kind of later in life where you
Sweetheart,
developed it?
I am older than dirt. When I was growing up, there was no
Oh
Star Wars. There was Star Trek. There was Star
yeah.
Trek. But Star Wars happened when I was in college.
Oh wow.
Okay. Oh, wow. I'm very, very old. By cracky, I was there when God made dirt. I went to school with God. He was in the class behind me. Anyway.
It's so funny because that's like I was talking to Hayden the other day about how she was like, I was talking about Solo, and I was like, I was in college and you were still in high school when Solo came out, and I was like, like just like the way, like I was like, I felt old doing that. Like I was like, you don't know.
That's you're at a great time in your life. Every time in life has its rewards and its challenges. But if you never, ever, ever sell who you are, okay? You can rent who you are. I rent myself, but I will not sell myself. There is nothing anyone can offer you that is worth your integrity, that is worth your sense of who you are as a human being. You're that sense of power, that sense of joy. And there's an entire technique in the self-development system that I created. I call the ancient child. That is nothing more than visualizing the child you were, and then visualizing the old woman you're going to be on your deathbed. One end of your life, the other end of your life. You just let those two parts of yourself have conversations. Just listen. Just listen to what they have to say. All the wisdom and power and courage you could possibly want, all the creativity, all the aliveness you could want would be in the conversations between those two parts of who you are. And if you'll notice, a little bit of that concept snuck into that book. You know, I'll be honest with you. For all practical purposes, there is some real magic encoded in that book. I've had the opportunity to study some very interesting things. I've had some fascinating teachers, and I was able to speak with the widow of one of my teachers in shamanic techniques. Concerning the dream magic in this, there's stuff in that book that is real, because I wanted the if it is true that the more time you spend immersed in fantasy, the less likely you are to be totally happy with the world as it is, and I don't exclude myself from that at all, then. On some level, people are hoping that their entertainments will help them contextualize their lives and help them to become who they want to be. If you're reading stories of heroic fantasy, then you wish that there were heroes. And on some level, I think you're asking, where is the hero inside me? How can I bring out that hero? I have moments where I'm heroic, where I'm courageous, where I'm unusually honest, when I have, the strength of 10 because my heart is pure. But most of the time, I'm just getting through life. So, to the degree that I had the opportunity to learn some things that indigenous cultures considered to be real and could adapt those things into a fictional context, I did. I felt that that would be a gift I could give to the fans, that I would, there is power in learning who you are. There is power in knowing what matters to you that's more important than your own life. There is power in love and laughter and understanding that your fear does not mean that you cannot do things. Your fear just means that your body and mind are preparing themselves for a threat. Okay. What are we and what is the world? A mother, a teacher, a healer, each of them has different versions of the same answer, and so does a warrior. They all fit together into the indigenous tribal communities that formed humanity in early times, 10,000 years ago, 20,000 years ago. What allowed us to stop being so afraid of the night? What allowed us to survive as a people? Civilization has given us many, many advantages, and trust me, I love contact lenses, but it can also separate us from aspects of our being that are precious. And I think this is one of the reasons why, the Jedi, it's like, is there not Is there not a part of me that could be a sacred warrior? Given the right circumstance, the right training, the right motivation, couldn't I save the galaxy? And I think you don't ever want to lose the part of you that feels that way any more than you want to lose the part of you that feels like a precious little princess or a mighty, a healer that could heal the sick, and right, a teacher who could inspire an entire classroom to go out and change the world. Every single one of those aspects of what we are, they're all you. They're all you, and you should be able to switch between them depending on, whether or not I need to be a goofball at the moment, or wrestle with my cat, or be a philosopher with my son, or a lover to my wife, or whatever it is. Those are all aspects of who I am, and all of them relate to that core question, who am I? So in creating Mace Windu, you talked about the concept of the brainworm, and I said that in medieval literature, there was a concept of the mind worm, where it's like an insect that would crawl in the ear of your character, and by the time it crawled out the other ear, it would have devoured, expressed everything that there was to know about that character. So you have an idea what your character is, and then you deliberately create a situation that empties that character out. Let me explore aspects of Mace Windu that I've never seen anybody explore. Let me explore aspects of the Jedi I've never seen. Let me explore aspects of the Force that nobody's ever done. Can I do that? Will they let me get away with it? Can I contribute in that way? Those are the kinds of questions that keep it fresh. When I was my first book signing, a guy in his 50s came to the book signing. And he gave me his business card. He was a writer, and his business card said, "Freelance hack and literary mechanic." And he was dead of alcoholism within 18 months. See, he was wasting his gifts. He was blind to his own heart. He had traded his soul for money. It doesn't work. Never, ever. And find the things that you will die before you'll let someone take from you. And you make your stand there, and you build a life of meaning on that, and never let anybody take that away from you. And if you do that, you become a Jedi.
I feel like that's like a beautiful place to would be to
Yeah.
end, like end. But I feel like I still
Your
have
choice,
like
sweetheart.
other questions for you. I mean, I guess maybe one last thing is like how do you feel like having this impact now on Star Wars canon and this character who has existed for so
Feels
years and
good.
is played by such an iconic actor?
There are ways in which I have been a pioneer in my life. Once again, not necessarily a discussion for this, but I feel like I've earned my air. That's one of the things. I wake up in the morning. How can I earn my air today? Who can I help today? What can I express today? How can I make the world a better place? I'm very clear on the fact that I'm going to die, that I don't get to do this forever. And so I ask myself frequently, what can I do that would have meaning? How can I help somebody else the way the world has helped me? As you can probably guess, I have been the recipient of superb teaching. I have had superb teachers, men and women of real knowledge and power, who saw something in me and decided to share. Said, "You're struggling with this, Steve. This, you're swimming in a circle, and there are sharks. Here's the dock. Here's the beach. Here's a life preserver." I'm running out of those teachers now. I'm at the point in my life where my teachers are aging out, and they're dying. And it's like, it's my turn now. Who can I help? Anything in my life that I'm interested in, I want to be a master of. I'm not interested in just being decent at something or even just good at something. Mastery, I have a working definition of mastery that really works for me. Mastery is a verb, not a noun. It's a vector, not a position. And once you have learned the basics of your craft or discipline and integrated it at the level of unconscious competence, so it's just a part of you, look, ma, no hands, and you have committed to that path for a lifetime, you are on the path of mastery as much as anyone else who's ever been on that path. And when you meet masters, they don't try to lord it over you because they're just concerned with where they are. Masters are always doing, always teaching, and always learning. So if I am to give respect to the people who helped me, my karate master, my writing mentors, you know, whatever it is, in various, you know, meditative disciplines and so forth, it is critical that I share. It is critical that I share. It is critical that I be, in moments when it is appropriate, as direct and clear and free of bullshit as I can be. Because there are people who are looking for real answers. And I kind of figure whenever I do one of these, whenever I do an interview like this, or a speech, or write a book, or teach a class, or make an appearance, my assumption is that somebody in that audience needs to know that there is a path they can walk. It's not my path. It's just a path that I'm, because I didn't create it. All I can do is point it out. That's the most I can possibly do. I can talk about how I walk it. But you have to walk your own version of it. There is one mountain called life, but there are many paths up that mountain. I'm walking one that I know has worked for me. For those who feel that they hear what I'm saying and what I'm saying makes sense, then I'm happy to share what it is I know about my trip up that mountain. But what I hope that is that everyone will find their own path, that everyone will find a way of being in life that means as much to them and gives them as much of a sense of engagement that my path has given me. That, you know, that what the meaning of life in that sense is, you know, the couple different ways to look at it. To escape suffering, embrace joy, and to be of service. That's one great way of looking at it. Another way is the Mexican, it's a Mexican toast that says health, love, money, and time to enjoy them. I wish that for everybody.
That was so wonderful. We very deeply appreciate you coming on and talking to us.
Pleasure.
It was really amazing to hear more about you personally and also, of course, the work that you did with this book. Yeah.
It's my pleasure. People who like, who see, feel like I'm speaking to them, I do a free Zoom call every Friday where we talk about life and writing and so forth. It's actually called life writing, you know, looking at being the hero in the adventure of your lifetime, applying, you know, applying that perspective to what life is. And you can contact me at StephenBarnesList.com and get on my mailing list. And I'm, you know, happy to, you know, are there, I have products and services and stuff like this that I sell because I do enjoy money, but I also enjoy, I do, I love, nothing works like money in the arenas in which money works. It's just, that's the ticket of the adult world. And, you know, my whole thing, another Venn diagram, you know, here's a circle of the things I want to write. Here's a circle of the stuff I think people will buy. Where those two circles overlap, that's where I write, you know, because money. But as you can tell, I write for money, but money isn't why I write. Money enables me to keep writing. Okay. So if I was a billionaire, I'd still care about my sales and I'd still care about my reviews because I care about, you know, did this communicate? Did you get it? So your smiling faces and your laughter and giggling and so forth tells me that we're kind of on the same wavelength. You trust me. I did not betray your trust. You opened that book with open hearts, hoping I would take you to a galaxy far, far away. And I did. Great. I love it. So you can, that's where you can find out more about me. If you're interested in that book that is specifically, you know, my closest trick on how to become a Jedi, it's called The Magic Formula, and you can get, you can check that out at www.realheroesjourney.com.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Kessel Run Relay. We once again thank Stephen Barnes for taking the time to come on and letting us interview him. Please make sure to go check out everything that he mentioned. All of his links will be in the description. Make sure to follow us across social media. Our links will also be in the description. We know that it's been a while, but we have some things in the works that we will hopefully update you guys on very soon. So thank you guys so much for your continued support, and may the force be with you.